Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, hello everyone and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the rain-drenched streets of New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, shortly head to the chat room and we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
No idea how that keeps sneaking up. Thank you, Blog Talk Radio. Anyway, folks, we will be discussing this week's Monday Night Raw, 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486. Okay, well, let's get right to it, because there's quite a bit to discuss, really, and last night's Raw was predicated upon one basic storyline, and that storyline is, will the Shield break up? Will Dean Ambrose cut ties with the Shield and join the Dogs of War after Dolph Ziggler makes this impassioned speech about how the Shield do not appreciate him, how they use Dean Ambrose, how he cited examples of such, and that's kind of what predicated the entire show. What will happen? Will Dean Ambrose ultimately, in the main event, turn on his Shield brethren and go with the Dogs of War, even though that's not who they're facing? But the show started out, Stephanie McMahon, whose birthday it happens to be, getting out of a limo with her husband Triple H, Baron Corbin attempting to sing happy birthday, her getting mad at him despite the fact that he's a heel, and threatening that Kurt Angle may be back from vacation a whole lot sooner than we think if you don't get this situation in order. Here's the problem when you're trying to play an authority figure and you're trying to be the heel in doing it. Then you have to side with the heels. If you side with no one, if everyone sucks except you, then you become a heel entity all to yourself. It's a bad idea. It's not going to work. And later on in the show, of course, they just drop that persona completely. Just not a good idea. And the only reason it was even used was to set up Baron Corbin has to find two partners to take on the Shield in the main event. It's the only reason. And we're going to get to all of everything that happened, but there's the 800-pound gorilla in the room that we probably should address first, so we're going to do it. And that is that Natty and the Bellas took on the Riot Squad. And if you do not know by now, Liv Morgan was knocked unconscious. Now, let me first say this. Wrestling is a very tough sport. And you're going to get your share of bruises, broken bones, being knocked unconscious, losing your teeth. Everything you can possibly think of is going to happen to you if you're going to be a professional wrestler for any long period of time. And that's because there are very high-risk moves. A suplex could go wrong. The guy's knees could buckle. You could get thrown out of the ring and, you know, you catch your elbow or your knee or your knee pad on the rope and it turns you wrong. Guy could, you know, not be able to support your weight due to any number of issues. He could come down wrong. You could land wrong through your own issue. There are many, 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 many ways to get injured in pro wrestling, and 99% of them are nobody's fault. 99% of them are, hey, you just took it wrong, or hey, you know, the guy, it was a complete and total 100% accident. Now, they're all accidents. Nobody's out there saying, I'm purposely going to try to injure you. But there's a difference between an accident that happens because it's unavoidable, such as I went to pick you up. I didn't have your balance right. You shifted your weight. My knee buckled and you fell wrong. That's 50-50 fault. It's life. It happens. No one's infallible. But here's the way you should never be injured. You should never, ever, ever be injured by a punch or a kick, because that is basic wrestling 101. Any idiot knows, unless you totally move, I mean, unless you literally walk right into that punch, and even then, if you're good at what you do, you should be able to pull up and say, oops, they're moving. I did a lot of hardcore matches, a lot of them. And injured one or two people and got injured a couple of times myself, but always an accident. No one ever got hit because, oh, I just hit you too hard, way too hard, in the teeth. Or I just kicked you directly in the throat. Never happened. Never happened. Last night, Brie Bella, in trying to do her husband's yes kicks, just 100% kicked Liv Morgan directly in the face. Directly in the face. And then as Liv Morgan is passing out, falling forward, she kicked her in the face again. Full force. Now let me explain to you why this is Brie Bella's fault. First, you're given a target. That person who's taking the yes kick is sitting there not moving. You don't believe me? Watch. They sit there on their knees and they wait for the kicks. And they give you a perfect target, which should never be the face. It's the chest. But even if it was the face, you got a perfect target to pull up. So you're going to swing your leg as hard as you possibly can, full force at someone, and misjudge how far away they are from you, then whose fault is that? But worse than that, when you see you no longer have that clear target because they're slumping forward, and you understand, you mean to tell me you don't know you made physical contact, hard physical contact with a human being's face? There's a feel. Whenever I hit somebody, if I gave them a particularly hard shot, I knew it and said, oop, that one was a bit of a potato, wasn't it? That was a little harder than I hoped, because you felt it. If you kick somebody full force in the face with your foot, then you know it. And then to not back off and say, oops, that was hard, that'll be the last one of those kicks, let's see if I did any damage, to say, no, I'm giving her another one. I know she's falling forward, but hey, not my fault she's falling forward. Here comes another one, and bam, the second one hits full force. That's unacceptable because you do not have a clear target. Why do you think when wrestlers are in the corner or they're taking the yes kick or they're getting punched in the face repeatedly with those jabs that some wrestlers do, that they stick their chin out and give you that clear target? So you can judge, I'm not going to move. Why do you think a super kick, the person, you know, pounds on the mat and sets up for it so they can judge the distance, and the guy turns around, he doesn't take a step forward when he turns around. He turns around on a dime because he knows that person, judging how far the super kick is going to be from him, is attempting to judge the distance between their jaw and his leg. If he takes a giant step forward, that's going to blow it, right? But at the end of the day, a stationary target on her hands and knees should never be hit full force in the face with a kick. That's your fault. And then even if that's an accident and you say, oh, my God, you know, I swung my foot and I just misjudged it. Okay, well, that's bad because your job is not to misjudge it. But if you did that, you sure as hell don't throw the second one. You sure as hell don't throw the second one, because when you're looking at the person, you're seeing they're moving forward. Or aren't you looking at the person? Hey, we're sorry about that, folks. Todd, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, we had a little bit of a brownout here. We're having a major storm. But as I was saying, you don't throw the second kick. It's the first thing you're taught. Keep your eye on your opponent. You can't brain them. And this was not one of those things where you're saying, look, there's 14 moves here. I'm whipping you to the ropes. I'm jumping over you. You're dropping down. I'm running with a clothesline. You're ducking. I'm hitting the ropes and leaping with a flying body press. And then two drop kicks. And then I'm throwing this. I'm coming off the turnbuckle and giving you an uppercut. And oops, the uppercut hit too hard. Because it was such a long series of moves that had to be done rapidly that I misjudged it a little bit. Because that happens a lot. This was not Cesaro gets thrown into the corner and misjudges how far he can leap and hits his teeth on the iron buckle there. That's not that. That's not that at all. This is a girl standing, or sitting, I should say, kneeling perfectly still, awaiting a kick, and Brie Bella kicks her directly in the face. And then does it again. And by the way, hits Ruby Riott so hard with an elbow the other week that it brained her, and potatoes the Miz the week before that on SmackDown. What the hell is going on? Called ring rust because they haven't done anything in such a long period of time, but now all of a sudden they got to be, all of them got to be the center of attention. Nikki Bella damn near kills herself with a weird outside flip, whatever the hell she was trying to do. So what's their track record been since they've been back just after Hell in a Cell here? How's things been going? Brie Bella's been hitting people for real constantly. The Miz, Ruby Riott, now Liv Morgan, who's injured. May have a concussion. Or a broken jaw. They're not even sure. Tried to get a report before the show, but I couldn't. Nikki Bella damn near kills herself. Here's a thought. They're not ready for the ring right now because they waltzed back in too quickly saying, well, we haven't really done anything. I have a practice facility at my house. And I did a little training there. Come on, folks. So here's what we got leading up to Evolution. Sasha Banks, injured. Alexa Bliss, injured. Liv Morgan, probably injured. We don't know what the status is of any of them. We're assuming Alexa Bliss is going to be okay. I'm assuming Sasha Banks is going to be okay. I don't know about Liv Morgan, but that's three people. And they've all been injured by people who really haven't spent enough time in the ring lately or at all. Because it's more important to promote that. This is unacceptable, Mike.
It really is unacceptable. And look, as you've said before, we saw what happened when people that are ready to be in the ring actually make a mistake. I mean, the whole thing with Paige and her neck, and was it Charlotte or who kicked her in the neck and she went down? You know, those two girls were ready to go in the ring, but that was a mistake, okay? And that the other girl should have known not to do the enziguri that basically ended Paige's career, you know? An accident. Yeah, that's an accident, you know? Whereas this stuff is not an accident. Like you said, there's a reason why when Hacksaw Jim Duggan went down for that three-point clothesline that he would kind of tap his back foot on the ring. That's to tell the other guy that he's coming, you know. That's the timing aspect of wrestling, you know. And right now these girls, the Bellas, they just don't have the timing correct right now. I mean, it's amazing that the Miz, I mean, we know the whole gimmick with the Miz when he pulled Maryse out of the ring, but he probably saved her life, You know, save her career at least.
She doesn't want to fight him. It's no wonder they're booking her to run away. For God's sake. Todd, you know just as well as I know that the very first thing you learn when you begin to wrestle is how to throw your punches and kicks so they don't brain somebody, and how to judge a target, and how to pull up. And the bottom line is, if you kick somebody dead in the face, you know it.
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, I took bumps in the ring quite a few times, and you knew what you were doing. I knew what I was doing, giving and taking bumps and kicks and punches and
you know
the
if
proper
you
way.
Swing your foot and you kick somebody too hard, you know you made that connection, correct?
Absolutely.
So then do you throw another one, or do you say, oops, that one was a potato, let me just calm down?
I like you said, it would be, if I did it that way, I that'd be an accident, like I didn't mean it.
Of course, you say, I'm not throwing another one. That's the thing. Here's what you do. Do me a favor, any of you people don't believe me. Throw a fake punch at the wall. Throw four fake punches and then punch the wall as hard as you possibly can and tell me that you don't feel the difference in your knuckles. And say, oops, I really hit the wall that time. That's going to sting. I don't care. If you throw a kick and hit a girl dead in the jaw, you're going to be like, oh, man, my shin or my foot. I felt that. So then what do? You say, man, I just made really, really hard contact with somebody's face. That was an accident. I'm not throwing another kick, even though the script says I'm supposed to. No, instead, brain dead Brie Bella says, let me throw another one on top of this, even though I just brained her. And she doesn't wait for the target because the girl's fallen forward. She sees her falling forward, or I guess she doesn't see her falling forward. I'd like to assume it was a total accident. So she doesn't even care that she's slumping forward because you've just made huge contact with her face. And brains her the second time. If ever you hit somebody hard and it's a mistake, you know, let me give them a little time to recover from that. That hurt. And you instantly take them down and say, sorry, you know. My fault, my bad. You don't throw another one, for God's sake, and you sure don't do it if you don't have a clear target on the girl because she's slumping forward. You ever see a wrestler, once in a while you'll see it, not too much in the WWE because most of them are extreme professionals, but did you ever see a wrestler climb to the top, he's going to jump off on his opponent, and then he realizes he's not really in the right position, and this is going to be real dangerous, so they do something else. They call an audible and say, I was supposed to do this, but he's a little too far away, or he's laying in the wrong position. Sometimes I've actually seen him get down and readjust them. Not Brie Bella. It's, oh, well, tough. I'm Brie Bella. I know I just kicked you in the face because my foot is throbbing from the impact on your jaw, but here comes another one, sister. And then you write a tweet saying basically, well, you know, wrestling is a very, very tough sport. And while we go out there and try to win, we certainly never try to injure anyone. And my thoughts are with Liv Morgan. Yeah, well, great. How about you learn to wrestle then? How about that? How about you don't make those rookie mistakes? And that's what that is. That's a rookie mistake. That's a bonehead, no excuse, your fault mistake. It's not an accident. See, there's a difference between an accident and a mistake. An accident means it's really nobody's fault. It's just an accident. It's one of those things that happen. If a tree falls on your car during a storm, that's an accident. If I'm chopping down the tree and I fail to realize that it's leaning right toward your car, that's a mistake. But it's still my fault. I don't know, Mike. I mean, this is getting bad here with the amount of injuries and the amount of people who seem to be either poorly trained or ring rusty.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, even look, we could deal with somebody like, I don't know, Ronda Rousey, who doesn't have a lot of training and who we know is green as grass doing this stuff. But these are the Bellas. These girls, have, even though they've not wrestled in 3 years, they're veterans, you know. They've been around, you know. So, and they should know better, you know. And that's the thing. These guys, you don't see Daniel Bryan doing that type of stuff. You don't even see Nakamura doing that type of stuff. And we know what Nakamura's finisher is, you know. So,
right. No, you don't see it because I got news for you. If Nakamura threw a kick and hit somebody full force, he's not throwing the second one. He's not throwing the second one. He's going to go down, make sure the guy's all right. I mean, that's just the way it goes. Nakamura made a mistake with John Cena. It was a mistake. Nakamura admitted the mistake and said, it is my fault. I couldn't get his weight up totally on that suplex because Nakamura's not a big suplex guy anyway, and John Cena's a little heavier than I guess Nakamura can really transfer weight from, or apparently. And, you know, he landed on the back of his neck. It's one of those things. That's an accident. But he didn't pick him up and do it again. Anyway, we start with Finn Balor with his Mixed Mag tag team partner, Bayley, against Jinder Mahal, coming down to the ring with not only Sameel Singh, but his Mixed Match tag team partner, Alicia Fox. And one of the biggest pops of the nights come from something so simple. And the WWE, I guarantee you, will not understand, why did that get a big pop? Alicia Fox trips Finn Balor, which almost led to Finn Balor being pinned by Jinder Mahal. When Jinder Mahal whips himself to the ropes, Bayley returns the favor and trips Jinder Mahal. And the fans pop. Big pop. And I guarantee you, the powers that be are back there scratching their heads saying, why did that get a big pop? Well, here's why it got a big pop. Because fans are sick of Bayley being Little Miss Nice Girl. And they want to see Bayley be one of those girls that say, look, I'm going to play by the rules until you don't. And then when you don't, then all bets are off the table. It's good to see her fighting back. That's what they want from Bayley. There's your cue. There's your cue to what they want. Finn Balor wins. A little bit of a fight seems to ensue between him and Sameel Singh, but they work it out. Everybody has a peaceful moment. And to be honest, this is probably just, you know, trying to keep the Finn Balor fans appeased because a win over Jinder today, Mike, isn't really a big deal.
Right. And look, this, I mean, when I saw that little fight type thing kind of take place, this could be, I mean, I'm in the back of my head, I'm thinking this could be a setup for a potential breakup between the Sings when the other one comes back and the Man of Peace there, because
Jinder,
we know
yeah.
that. Yeah, because we know that one, there are guys that are not big guys, and two, that they're gonna have the cruiserweight tag teams, and those two guys would fit into that cruiserweight tag team division thing. So
right. That
might be where they're going with that.
Yeah, I agree. Could be. We'll see what ends up happening. Anyway, with the Riot Squad and the Bellas, we already talked about that. The Riot Squad gets the win. They had to totally call that match on the fly after Liv Morgan had to be escorted back after being knocked unconscious. Then we get Chad Gable versus Connor in a one-on-one match. And for inexplicable reason, Chad Gable loses. Okay, well, I don't know then. I don't know. There we go with the 50-50 booking again. There we go with it. So, and then the geniuses that are the announcers are saying, well, you got to understand, Chad Gable's mostly used to tag team wrestling. Connor isn't. How's that an excuse for losing when Connor is too? It's not that I'm not happy to see Connor get the win. To be honest, I think maybe they should break up the team. Connor looks like a monster. But I don't know where the storyline's going here. I thought it was going to be Chad Gable gets a lot of success. The team gets a lot of success. One gets jealous of the other, and they turn on each other. Then and it goes to 50-50 booking. And then they say the crowd is in a hushed silence. They're so shocked that Connor got that victory. No. The crowd is in a hushed silence because they're like, what the hell just happened? How does that make any sense? Was that a mistake? But Todd, that was a weird, that's a weird booking.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. And that was weird booking right there. Like, okay. I thought, like, it's different. Like,
Connor wins for what reason? Are you going to promote Connor? I don't think so. So that's weird. Now, backstage, we get a really good, I thought we had a really good segment, where Dolph Ziggler approaches Dean Ambrose. Dean Ambrose instantly grabs him and says, look, you know, I don't need you around here. Ziggler's like, I'm not here to fight. I'm just here to tell you the truth. I watched you in SmackDown become the champion all by yourself. You were cranking on all cylinders. You didn't need anybody. And now look where you are. Come back. And you're kind of just, oh, I'm the guy that prevents Roman Reigns from losing his title to Braun Strowman. I'm the guy who helps Seth Rollins not lose his Intercontinental title to me. You're just their useful idiot, really. And you could be a lot more. Ambrose seems to be contemplating that. That's a good skit. Give him credit for it, Mike. It everyone involved did a good job.
Yeah, and that was a pretty good writing. And that kind of fits into what's going to happen a little bit later. But, yeah, that was pretty good writing right there. And that was a pretty good skit. Some of these things were pretty good this week, you know. And
yeah, it wasn't too bad.
But yeah.
And on top of that, Mike, we get to see finally that some of the guys who can handle promos, like they didn't let Braun Strowman do too much, but Drew McIntyre can handle one, Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, Dolph Ziggler. They went with the hot hands. You know, no Roman Reigns, no Braun Strowman. They let the guys who can use the mic. Good job. Definitely a good job by both guys. So Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre defeat the Revival in what was a really good match. Now, the problem with the match is, here's why it was a better match than even people are going to say it was. Because everyone within the sound of my voice knows the Revival are not winning that match. Everyone knows it. So they come out and you're like, whatever. The Revival's not even booked to be that tough. They're not. These guys are going to get hammered. And there were actually times in that match when I said, they're going to take these belts off these guys. They're going to take the belts off these guys like I suggested so they can have other feuds. Because there was a couple of really close 2 2/3 counts that I'm really convinced, oh my God, they're going to take the belts off these guys. I mean, it only lasted a second, and then I came back to reality and said, no, they'll never do that. But the fact that they could even for a moment, Todd, suspend my disbelief in that means they did a good job.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. That was a pretty good match with Ziggler and McIntyre against the Revival, and it was a pretty good match when I watched it last night, and wow, a lot of great false moves and finishes and pins and everything.
I really thought for a couple of seconds that they might actually let the Revival take this and say that they were distracted by the whole Shield thing, and then that wouldn't be for the belts. You know, the feud, there wouldn't be a real feud with the belts going forward, and they'd let some other team, Mike, have it so they could go on with other feuds and things. So really good job by both, all four guys.
Really good job, but I knew they weren't. I kind of figured out they weren't gonna, you know, let them win, because at no point during that match did you see the shatter machine.
Right.
And we know what happens when that thing happens, that hardly anybody gets up from that thing. So if you're specifically told not to do your move, which I'm pretty sure that was written in the script that move is not to be in this match.
But Mike, that's a good thing because they saved it. In other words, they didn't waste that move. If they had given the shatter machine and Drew McIntyre kicked out, you've weakened the move. By having them never give it, it kept the move strong. It was like, okay, well, maybe if they'd hit the shatter machine, it would have been over. But they did a really good job. All four of these guys did a good job, and I have no problem with this match at all. Now I'm going to play the Grinch, because I have a problem with what come next, and I have a major problem with it, to be honest with you, and that is this 22-minute Connor's Cure thing. I know. It's a great cause. Believe me, when those two kids got out of that car, and I saw that those two kids were battling cancer, it choked me up. It really did. And I'm so glad to hear they're doing fine and thriving, like Stephanie McMahon said. But here's the problem. Number one, this comes in the middle of the show, where Stephanie McMahon and Triple H were just playing the heels, and you're expected to root against them for The Undertaker. Now they're out here saying how wonderful, it is, and they're fighting this with the Hyundai or whatever the sponsor was, and they're back to their old normal selves, and everyone is up on the rampway, including people who are wanting to kill each other. And I'm saying, was this necessary in the middle of the show? Is this something you want to do in the middle? Could you not have done this right at the beginning? And could you not have done it before TV and then just edited it to show a much more condensed version of this? Show the children getting their belts, which was wonderful. Show the presentation of the $200,000 check, which is wonderful. Have the wrestlers on the stage, which is wonderful. But not have to go through this elaborate glad handing of the WWE for years and years and years and years and years have been a forerunner in this thing, and we are doing this and we are doing that, and we are wonderful people, and Hyundai is also wonderful people, and Hyundai has this many models of cars, and Hyundai did that, and Hyundai did this. Please, you took up 22 minutes of the show. And a lot of that self, aggrandizement. A lot of that's patting yourself on the back. And then you kind of disguise it by saying, no, we're going to call the kids down to the ring and they're going to stand there holding the check too. So, I mean, it's not self-aggrandizement. Yeah, it is. Could we not have just done that before Raw? Taped it. Had a little bit of a condensed version of it and called it a night? The answer is, yeah, you could have. But you're heading for bad publicity, don't you? And you're doing anything you possibly can to say, no, we're the good guys. Look at us. Look what we're doing. Now, I'm not belittling their contributions. I can't think of a better cause. And certainly those children had the time of their life and the night of their life probably, and that is to be commended. But don't water it down. You know what I mean? Don't water it down by trying to use it for your own purpose, because then it bothers me a little. I always liked those guys who had to be outed, like, somebody would say, you do know that this particular person donates this much money to charity. And everybody's like, no, I did not know that. How come they didn't say? Well, they don't say because they don't want the credit for it, because they don't want to make it look like that's the reason they're doing it. They're doing it with the purest of intentions. They're doing it because they truly feel this is a worthy cause. And I'm not saying the WWE does not feel this is a worthy cause. They do. But the WWE cannot help themselves. They cannot help themselves when it comes to things like this. They say to themselves, how do I get something out of it too? How does the company benefit by this? Well, we'll take some pictures with kids, present them with the belts. Could you have picked other people to do it? Did it have to be Stephanie and Triple H? Yeah, it did, because they're the CEOs, right? Why couldn't you give that moment to some faces who maybe need a push? You go represent the company. Didn't they used to do that with John Cena? Sure you did. All the time you did. But you know that you got to put on your best face now, because you're the CEOs who made the decision to go to Saudi Arabia. So you're going to get the heat. So if you're going to get the heat, you're the ones who also got to take the credit when something's done. See how that works? Can't give that moment to Roman Reigns. Can't give that moment to Finn Balor. Can't give that moment to another face in the locker room, because we need the good publicity. We need it to be Triple H and Stephanie are great people. So that if you dare say something about the Saudi Arabian thing, they can say, but what about? See how that works? I don't like that. It left a bad taste in my mouth, Mike. Maybe I'm cynical.
Right. You know, maybe I'm cynical too, but you know what else it did? It come off of a series of events that, you know, the whole thing with Bayley getting her pop, the thing with Ziggler and Ambrose backstage, the match between the tag team match and that stuff. It was kind of getting a flow to it. The show was kind of getting a flow to it, and then this 22-minute thing happens. You know, I would have loved to have seen Rhino.
Heath Slater.
Heath Slater. I've got kids. That would have been very well with his gimmick, and he could have been the face of that thing, you know. And I've given money or whatever, but, you know, I've got kids, and I know how I'd deal if this would happen to one of my kids or something to that effect.
Where's the B team? Where's the B team? How come it couldn't have been Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel? You know what I mean? They need a little bit of the rub. How come it couldn't have been them?
I mean, we're looking at egos run amok here with Stephanie and
that's what you're looking at, and you're looking at, you know, what you're looking at, Mike? You're looking at protective cover. We need the good publicity in case we get any bad. We can always say, yeah, but look what we did here. And that struck me as bad. Now, as far as people saying, well, the Hyundai guy, you know, did he really have to say Hyundai, who manufactures such and such cars and does this and that and the other thing, and did he really have to say that? Yeah, he did. You can't blame that guy. They're given $200,000. So he has a right to say what they make and try to get a little plug-in for his company. I'm sorry, but he does. But Stephanie and Triple H should have handed that moment off. You just got finished being bad guys a minute ago. Could you hand that moment off to someone? I guess you don't have anybody that you think is John Cena quality over there. Otherwise, you probably would have. It's a shame, because it left me with a bad taste for something I really, really thought was a great gesture. We then get this situation where Seth Rollins approaches Drew McIntyre. And I thought this was better, actually, than Dolph Ziggler approaching Dean Ambrose, because you want to talk about truth to power. I mean, he really said it. Dolph Ziggler was doing absolutely zero until you showed up. He's the Intercontinental Champion. How many matches are you getting? How come he gets all the shots? He becomes the Intercontinental Champion, loses it. You get any shots? No. Braun Strowman recruits you. You think he's going to care about you after he gets the title? No. Who does Braun Strowman care about? Everything he said, 100% right. But then we get clever writing, which we almost never get. So when we get it, I have to bring it forward, because I think it's very clever writing that Drew McIntyre then approaches Dean Ambrose and says, do you know what just happened? Seth Rollins basically tried to recruit me. Now, I want you to think about this carefully. Do you think Seth wants four people in the Shield, possibly looking to replace one? And if he's looking to replace one, which one do you think that might be? That's great writing, because that makes perfect sense. Now, lesser writers would have said, Dean Ambrose is confused. What should I do? But now, Drew McIntyre is confused. Oh, you know, he made some good points too. What should I do? No. What they did, and it was clever, was Seth Rollins attempted to get in Drew McIntyre's head, and Drew McIntyre turned it around and said, I can use this to further get in Dean Ambrose's head. That was good writing, because when he approached Dean Ambrose and said that, I was like, that's very, very strong writing. Because now we see Drew McIntyre's no idiot. He's not going to fall for these mind games. He doesn't feel that way. He took what Seth Rollins said and twisted it just enough to make it look to Dean Ambrose like, why would my buddy Seth Rollins talk about potentially adding Drew McIntyre to our Shield without even consulting me. And what happens if he's not adding him? What happens if he's just subtracting one of us? It sure as hell wouldn't be Roman. And he's absolutely not talking about leaving himself. So that would be me. That's good writing, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. That is good writing right there. That's the smart part of the show, of good writing.
I was very impressed with that, and I thought, wow, now this could actually end up something. Now, I knew he wasn't going to turn because you've got that match scheduled. And here's the thing, while they're saying, you think maybe Drew McIntyre will turn? Do you think maybe Dean Ambrose will turn? We'll be back after this commercial break, and then the commercial break is, don't forget that on the Super Show, we got these guys versus these guys, and Saudi Arabia, we're going to have this, and then you're like, well, they're not breaking up. Or they wouldn't have these graphics. What are you going to do, switch it around? I would have loved that, by the way. If they'd have said, you know what, we got a double switch, which I thought they might do for a minute. Drew McIntyre is going to come over and join the Shield, and Ambrose is going to join the Dogs of War. So it's still going to be 3-on-3, but it's one guy switching sides. That would have been kind of fun, but I knew that wasn't going to happen. And that's not McIntyre doesn't need that either, because the Shield already has the one big guy, the one strong powerhouse guy. That's all they need. The Shield is a perfect balance because they have the technician, the powerhouse, and the more hardcore, you know, brawler. They've got all three styles in one team. If you mix that up and you put two powerhouses and one technician, it's not the same thing. So they're going to leave the Shield alone. Thankfully. We get, Lashley and Elias, and we get more of Lio Rush. Look, Lashley's getting over better since Lio Rush showed up, because Lashley needs somebody to talk for him, and Lio Rush talks constantly. Lio Rush is like a chatterbox somebody put on, you know, he's like the Energizer Bunny. And even though I still say he's doing a bad guy shtick, even though I still say that's a heel routine, it doesn't matter, because it's helping Bobby Lashley. Every time Bobby Lashley saves Lio Rush, though, I keep getting that feeling that the fans want to see him really just get decimated. And that's a heel thing. Now, Elias loses, but it's by disqualification. It looked like Lio Rush kind of tricked Kevin Owens into accidentally interfering. Kevin Owens is pleading his case that it was an accidental interference, which was true. And the only problem I have with this is that, again, Lio Rush comes off looking like the bad guy. Kevin Owens is right. It was accidental interference. And I'm not sure this team is going to work out well unless they do plan to turn Lashley heel. And if they do plan to turn Lashley heel, I would love to see it against John Cena at the big show, Mike.
I would love to see that at the big show as well. And look, like you said, this Lio Rush is Enzo. That's who he is. That's who he
is.
He's
a little
Enzo.
Less lovable. At least Enzo had that harmless sort of charismatic. This guy comes off annoying. Enzo's annoying too, but Enzo was annoying in a lovable way. This guy's not annoying in a lovable way. He's annoying in an annoying way.
Right. He's an annoying in an annoying way. And look, I want to say this. Going back to the whole thing with the Shield and the three other guys. What's his name? Came off looking. Seth Rollins came off looking like the architect again. Just by that little segment, you know?
No question. I mean, look, as far as all the Shield stuff and the Dogs of War stuff, it was all good. This match, Todd, again, I just feel like Lashley and Lio Rush are doing a heel spot.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. It looks like he's doing a heel thing. And like you said, you see Lio Rush trying to run away from Kevin Owens. He's doing like a face thing, and That's a face move right there when he's chasing Lio Rush, and Lio Rush is getting chased. That's a heel thing.
Yeah, it's like, okay, right, I'm a scaredy cat. Right, exactly. It's weird. It's a weird dichotomy. I don't know. I just feel that Lio Rush and Bobby Lashley are doing a heel routine right now as faces, and that's weird. Nia Jax and with Ember Moon, I guess they're the new best buddies team. Nia Jax takes on Alicia Fox, who has Mickie James with her, and obviously Alexa Bliss, who's still not able to wrestle, obviously, after her run-in with Ronda Rousey. Congratulations. And I'm not 100% sure that Mickie James didn't suffer at least a minor injury, because Ember Moon did that flip on the outside of the ring to her, and if you slow down the tape and watch it, Ember Moon's behind full force with Mickie James's face when she does the flip. In other words, you're supposed to shift your body so your hips don't hit somebody's jaw in their face. Ember Moon did not do that. And bam, full force, there goes Mickie James' face. And you did not see Mickie James for the entire rest of the match on camera or at ringside at all. Now, I heard no report that she was injured, and I don't think if she was, it was serious, but it could have been, you know, a fat lip, a busted nose, a busted tooth, a dislocated jaw. I don't know. But I do know that if a girl the size of Ember Moon, not that she's huge, but I mean, she's 140, 50 pounds probably, flips as hard as she can on you and her tailbone lands directly in your face, it's probably going to hurt. That's probably going to hurt. So I don't know how that worked out. Nia Jax won. It was one of Nia's better encounters. She let Alicia Fox have a little bit of offense. Now, if you aren't brain dead, you already knew it was going to be the Authors of Pain. I knew it was going to be the Authors of Pain from the moment they said, go find people, because there's money in the Authors of Pain versus the Shield. That's where the money is. But I got to tell you, quite frankly, it's only money if Roman Reigns is involved. Now, I know that sounds weird to you Roman Reigns hitters, but here's haters, but here's why it's only money for that. The Authors of Pain come off as two big, strong, indestructible monsters who just work on their power, 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 power. Who can match our power? Nobody can match our power. We're invincible. Did you hear the fans when Roman Reigns got tagged in and they realized it's going to be Akam and Roman Reigns for a second? There was that audible, ooh, because that's when they know, okay, the Authors of Pain are not going to steamroll Roman Reigns. He's going to be able to match their power. So if you're going to have a long-term feud, and he should, with the Shield and the Authors of Pain, the Authors of Pain may have to add a third person. I don't know if that can be Drake Maverick. He's too small. I mean, I guess it could be, but then he's going to be the weak link, and everybody's going to say, oh, he's the one that's going to get pinned, and it's no big deal, and they're right. So if you could stick that third person in here, whoever it happens to be, this time it was Baron Corbin, it works a lot better. And this was a really good match. The matches on Raw were pretty good. The ones that people weren't getting killed, which was basically the ones that women weren't involved in, were all pretty good matches. But the dynamic between the Authors of Pain and the Shield are definitely there, Mike, but only there if Roman Reigns is in that corner to make that tag.
Yeah, it's only there then. And look, as you said, Drake Maverick right now is the manager. You know, you're going to need somebody bigger now. And with you're going to need somebody bigger than that. And could you throw in, I don't know, maybe Bray Wyatt, somebody like that you're not using right now? Possibly. But you're going to need a third big guy, you know, or medium-sized guy, if you get what I'm saying there.
Yeah, maybe you could add somebody to his stable. I mean, somebody, even if they bring somebody up from NXT or add somebody who isn't really doing too much right now, that would probably be a good idea. If you're going to have a long-term feud between the Shield and the Authors of Pain, you can have Ambrose and Rollins against the Authors of Pain, but I still say that the fans' real pop is with that they're so powerful that they're out muscling Ambrose. Oh no, they're just outpowering poor Seth Rollins. Oh no, they're beating up Dean Ambrose because they're just too powerful. They can't seem to take him down. The Shield's going to lose. And then Ambrose makes that hot tag and the fans say, they're not going to do it to Roman. So he becomes the hot tag hero. That's the way, psychologically, it's better if Roman's there, is what I'm saying. Because you can play with the fans psychologically. Seth Rollins is doing his very best. He's a great technician, but they're just too strong. If he doesn't make that tag, they're going to lose. Dean Ambrose is a wild man, but they're just too big and powerful, and they got him down. But then you make that tag to Roman, and all of a sudden, okay, the whole thing changes now, and here's another powerhouse who can handle them. That's a great way to do it, to play off the fans psychologically anyway. So it is better if Roman's there. So it's much better if you get a third person. I don't know who that third person's going to be, or even if they're going to do it, because Roman's a heavyweight champion. So I don't know if they're going to try to get any long-term feud. But if they think the fans are really popping because AOP and the Shield are going against each other, I want them to understand that while that still will be a really good match, the real payoff is we got a powerhouse in our corner too. It's like the Avengers, you know, where you're saying, I like Iron Man and I like Captain America, but oh my God, nobody's going to be able to take out this guy. He's just too strong. And then here comes the Hulk. And you're like, yeah, the Hulk. Well, that's kind of what it is with the Shield. The Shield of the Avengers, and in the Avengers Shield dichotomy, Roman Reigns is the Hulk. And that's why the Hulk was all, everybody was like, yeah, the Hulk. You know, he all had all those good scenes where when things looked dire and there was no hope and you say, somebody just needs to smash shit up, then here comes the Hulk, and that's what he did. So you got to use that. You got to exploit that. And the only way you're going to do it is by getting the third guy. Good match, though. Really good match. And the right guy lost. They kept AOP strong by having Baron Corbin lose, Todd, so that was a good decision.
You're absolutely right there. That was an excellent decision, having the Shield to win over AOP and Baron Corbin. It will keep both sides strong in their respective feuds, whatever they're in.
Yep.
And you're going to see that down the road.
It was good booking. That's good booking. You know, if I was booking it, same thing. Got to have Baron Corbin lose so the AOP still looks strong. And they can, you know, Drake Maverick can still say, look, we lost the match. I don't know if we call AOP getting beat. And we go into the Super Show with a possibility that still a slight possibility that Dean Ambrose is still thinking about turning on his Shield brethren. I don't think it'll happen. And even a small possibility that Drew McIntyre might see the light and leave, which I do see happening soon. He's tag team champions now, they're not going to, but soon. Because they're right. You want to keep Braun Strowman with him forever? Braun Strowman's not winning the belt. So then what happens when Braun Strowman don't win the belt? He's still keeping his team together? Braun Strowman don't need a team. So I don't know how long they'll do this. But regardless of how you look at it, if you're fair, Raw was not bad this week. It had its problems, especially with the female matches where there's injuries galore, with the 20-some-odd minute Connor's Cure segment that God bless them that they're helping, but do you really need to pat yourself on the back that hard? And by the way, I have a real problem. I'm sorry, but I have a real problem with Renee Young. Under no circumstances should Renee Young ever have said, ever have said on a live microphone, well, some of the things Dolph Ziggler said is true. I mean, nobody from the Shield ever did call Dean when he was hurt. What? That makes him look like scumbags. Why would you say that? Why in the world would you say that? Instead of saying, well, I happen to know that's not true. Or, if you didn't want to blow what Dolph said, say, I really don't know if that's true. I didn't really talk to Dean about it, but I doubt that's true, but I don't know. No, instead, she makes the declarative statement, yeah, that's true. when he was hurt and he was almost dead from an infection and everything else, not one time did Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns call him. Why would you say that? You don't think that makes him look like heels? That was a very bad mistake, Mike, by Renee Young.
Now my question is this. We know that people are in these guys' ears. Now, was somebody telling her to say that? You know?
I bet not, because there was a shocked quiet. There was a very shocked quiet after she said that and oops sort of moment. So I bet not. Todd, what's your rating this week?
I'm going to give it like a C. It was okay.
Okay, so he's right in the middle with a C. How's your feeling this week, Mike?
I'm going to go with a C minus. Just the fact that there were a little too many screw ups, you know, Renee Young and the caused injuries, and like you said, with what's her name going over the top rope and hitting her and landing 150 pounds in her face, you know, basically doing Naomi's move, and Naomi does that move very good, that rear view thing that she does.
Yeah, it wasn't well executed, and it could have hurt her. I don't know for sure. I'm going to be a little more generous. I'm going to give it a B minus because the matches were really good and there was some smart writing finally. Unfortunately, it was only about the same six guys that I told you this whole show is about now, but at least it was really entertaining and they did manage to help get over AOP a little bit. So that helps. We will be back here on Friday with a SmackDown report.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. WrestleChat Radio is a Savage Blade production.